My guest this week is a British Moroccan comedian and soon to be author. She's making a name for herself with her shows that take the piss out of preconceptions about Muslim women. This is Fatia El Ghori's Wonderbox. Fatia.
Yes.
Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you too, Habibi. Thank you for having me.
I love that word. That's so weird that you would say that, because whenever I remember going on a holiday in Egypt and there was a song that kept playing. It was like, Habibi.
Yeah.
So me and my wife often say Habibi to each other, which means kind of my friend or...
My love or my love. Darling. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful word. And but is it one of those words that means many things?
No, it means what you said. You can either be like my love. You can say in affection.
That's what I mean. But Habibi, presumably means
exactly.
My love.
Come here.
Yeah. But Habibi. Hello, mum.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? I just want to make sure.
Or even like my sister's got cats. Even sometimes I'm like, oh, Habibi, why are you doing this, Habibi? You know. So my mum speaks Arabic to them, but anyway.
Oh, that's interesting. So you got bilingual cats.
Yeah.
Do they respond better to English or Arabic? What's there?
Both.
Do they know when mum's pissy if she's suddenly like, if it's Arabic, you're like, we better stop eating this rat.
I think tone, they know tone. If you go, stop it.
Yeah.
Or like in Arabic, we say safi, which means safi. Enough.
Yeah. I love the rolling R's.
Yeah.
There's lots of and presumably to a cat that's really sexual. Like, isn't it? Is that, that's it. You're my Habibi, I'm yours. So do you speak Arabic as well?
I do, yeah. But it's in Morocco we speak a dialect.
Okay.
So it's a mixture of like the Berber language, Arabic, French and Spanish. A.K.A. the colonising cunts.
Yeah, well, is that what? Is that what?
That's what I call them.
Okay, yeah. the CCs.
Yeah. Are we allowed to say the C word?
Of course you can. What, colonizer? Yeah, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. I'm looking forward to this. What is the first thing?
It's a bit of an odd one.
Okay.
But it's something that I love. So, like, you know when you, like my niece, when she's four now, I've got two nieces that I'm really close to, 4 and 11. When they were little, you know, you get like, they get these fat rolls in their thighs and arms and that.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I just love it. I like put my finger in between the fat roll and then squeeze their arms. I just love it. It's cute.
Yeah.
And then like, so they'll be sleeping and you can see the little fat rolls and I'll take all these pictures and my sister's like, what are you doing? I'm going to call the police and stuff. Because it looks weird, but I just love it. It's one of the best things. I don't know what it is.
I know what you mean. It's that thing of they sometimes, they look delicious as well.
Yes.
And it's that, like, you don't drink. I do. Sometimes I'll stay around my sisters. And if I'm a little bit drunk, the kids have to get away from me. Because, like, a baby's leg, if you're drunk, looks absolutely delicious. But I know exactly what you mean. It's that kind of... Also, when the socks kind of push it all up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of... There's something so cute about it, isn't it?
It looks like... You know when you get, like, a fillet of fish burger from McDonald's?
Yeah.
It looks like the top of that bun, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
They look like little buns. And you know what else is, like, if you smell under a baby's neck, it's like heaven, isn't it?
You've got to know the baby.
Yeah. But, you don't do it to random babies.
Yeah. But I know what you mean. Like a bait, the smell of a newborn baby is something else.
It's amazing. It's like heaven, isn't it? If I could bottle that, I would, bro.
I wonder what it is. I wonder if it's a hormonal thing that makes you sort of like as an adult go, I must procreate.
Yeah.
But it's that, it's such a nice smell.
Yeah, and I don't have kids.
Yeah.
But like all my nieces and I'm all over them, bruv. Or when they were little, I used to take pictures of their little toes, their fat little fingers. And oh my God, and the fat rolls are just amazing.
And have they seen you do stand-up?
No.
Are they aware of what you do?
Yeah, they are.
That must be exciting. But I mean that seriously. It's like, but who has an auntie who's a stand-up? It's incredible. Like, aunties are normally kind of, in my experience, sort of quite angry ladies.
Oh, I'm that too.
Yeah. but the idea of having like a really funny auntie must be cool, who then goes out and does stand-up.
Yeah, I guess they do. Sometimes my niece will call me, like my sister will call me, and I go, let me talk to the girls. And the little one will go, are you
performing?
You said
that was so like Ray Winston. Let me talk to the girls. Like straight away. I don't want to speak to you. Put the girls on. Like that. Put me on FaceTime so I can see their phones. So you speak to the girls.
Yeah, I speak to them and they're like, oh, and the little one's like, are you performing?
Yeah.
And I'm like, sorry, bitch, what's going on? Are you my manager or something? Like, she's always like, yeah. And stuff like that. So she says, and she's got this thing now that she says she'll go, as I was saying, I'm like, hello, you've got attitude.
Yeah.
They pick it up in it. They don't realise what it means or like what you're saying. Or so you have to be careful. Bloody's another one. Oh, bloody hell. She'll go, auntie, that's a bad word.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I know what you mean. Because I swear a lot. Primarily because, you know, working class family and my dad's bad at DIY. But it's that thing where you're so conscious of not swearing in front of kids. Yeah. It's one of those bugbears when you see a little baby, you know, like a three-year-old swear and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
So you sort of have to adapt your language when they pick it up. So I don't know where this has come from, but I'll play Pro Evo soccer with my nephews. Mm. And if I miss, I'll go, stinking Marie. And that's become this thing of like this fictitious woman called Marie who smells. But the kids have now like, so if they can't find their shoes, like, stinking Marie, where is it? So we just need to hope they don't run into a Marie. So with these folds, what is it, do you think? Is it the softness? Do you think it's the fact that it's like this perfect kind of like sort of fleshy metaphor for the fact that they won't be like that forever? Do you know what I mean? But you'll always remember those kind of little baby.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it, like, I'm quite a tactile person. I like I like texture. I like to touch stuff and things like that. I don't know. I think some of it is that. Maybe some of it is because it reminds me of food, like you said. And I just think some of it, I don't know. I guess it is a bit like they're brand new. And like you said, you're not going to be like this forever. And they're so cute at that age, isn't it? They don't answer back. They don't ask for stuff.
Yeah.
They don't give it the bigger, nothing like that. And then like, and then I don't know. I don't know what it is, man. I just love it.
And do you want to have kids or you're not bothered?
I'm too old. I think, I'm too old, bruv. I haven't got the patience, I don't think. But I don't, like, if there's a man out there with children and is in love with me, please make yourself known. And, I don't mind if I have a partner and they have kids, but I don't want kids myself.
Fair enough. Yeah. But also, it's sort of that weird thing, isn't it? When did you start doing stand-up?
10 years ago.
Yeah.
So when I was like 32.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's such a sort of, it must feel like such a rebirth.
Yes.
As well, to kind of suddenly go, right, I'm going to do this.
Yes.
And then,
And it takes a lot, like, it's a lot of effort and stuff, you know, and time. And we don't do normal hours to other people and that. So it's hard, you know, and you have to be careful. You know, like sometimes in this industry, you get comedians and they're doing really well and then something might happen and they drop off the circuit and they can't come back to that level that they was at before.
Yeah.
Like, then, you know, you have to start from scratch. It's weird, isn't it? Like, you can't, it's not like if we was working, if we was like.
There's no maternity leave. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
None of that thing of like, I had a kid and can I come back in a year's time?
Yes.
No,
exactly.
It's taken.
Exactly. You have to start all the way from the bottom again. And then you can't always reach that level that you was at before you dropped off.
Yeah.
You know, so it's weird. Like, you always have to go full throttle and you have to stay at full throttle.
Yeah.
I find. But, which is easier for me because I don't have family. I'm only responsible to, I don't have my own family.
You've got a big family, though.
Family,
So you're one of 12, is that right?
Yeah. No, one of 13.
Apologies.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, I always forget myself. I forget that I'm in it.
Yeah. And are you close?
Yeah, we are. I would say definitely. We're mixed family. So some are from my mum and some from my dad. But I never ever say like my half brothers and sisters. We're all together. Like, I always say, because we grew up together.
Yeah.
So I never see it like that.
And presumably they've seen you do stand up.
Yeah.
That must be mind blowing.
That...
were you always the funny one? Or was everyone funny?
Everyone's funny. Yeah. In a Moroccan household, like, it's just wild. Like, our dinner table is crazy. Everyone's cussing everyone and all this kind of stuff. And
it's weird when you go around someone else's house. Did you find this when you were a kid? And suddenly it's kind of like silence.
Yeah.
And everyone's sat at the table. And then the dad says, how was your day? And you're like, what? I'm used to someone being sat on like the, you know, the edge of the dishwasher and like just having a go, and Neighbours is on in the background and your mum's clearly going through the menopause and it's all happening.
Exactly. It,
and then it's that strange thing. So how was maths? What? Hey? So your house was just...
Yeah, mental. And just wild. Like, we'd be at the table. I'd be in the kitchen eating from the pan. My mum's like, what are you doing? The food is here. And I'm like, no, I like it hot. And then she's like, and so she's like, Fatiha, you know, if you eat from the pan on your wedding day, it will rain. Wow. That's what she says. And I'm like, bruv, I got divorced twice. So, yeah. Like, not only did it rain, it fucking poured.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Like, you know, well, you know, technically she was right. Like, yeah, this is the problem. But isn't that... what? Mums have this amazing ability to conjure bullshit, don't they? Like, but I love that. It's just, don't eat from the bowl or it'll rain on your wedding day. Dads don't really have that. There's more of a sigh with dads. Oh, don't.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, Mum. Whereas Mum's just come ready-made.
Yeah.
What was your favourite thing to just eat from the pan?
Just like when she made like meat and potatoes and stuff. I just used to like to eat straight from the pan.
So you say Moroccan descent. So are we talking like chaotic tagines?
Yeah.
God, there's something about, like, who knew that meat and apricots together worked? But my Christ, your people have made that. Like, but as a combination, meat and apricots ain't happening. But the Moroccans were like, well, I see and I raise.
Because even me, I don't like sweet food. I like savoury stuff. Yeah. So like my mum makes this couscous, really nice, like couscous. It's got like 13 vegetables in it.
Yeah.
And then she makes, because we also have a version of it that's sweet with like raisins and caramelised onions and meat. Oh. And I don't like that version. But when she makes, I don't like it. But when she makes the vegetable, like the meat and veg one, she will make that sweet one on the side. And then my brother, who's an alien, and my sister, who's a psycho, they're like spooning it into their bit where they eat, and then like having the sweet as well as the veg. And I'm like, you're nasty, bro. That's some nasty shit. And so, and my mum's always trying to make me eat it. I'm like, bro, it's 42 years. Like, what? I've never eaten it. Why are you trying to make me eat it now?
Why isn't there a cookery show where people speak like that? Well, like, do you know what I mean? Like on Saturday Kitchen, you see somebody mixing it in. Just have you go, that is some nasty shit. You're a dirty fucker. But that sort of like honesty where people, because normally it's everyone's so pleasant and that's really nice.
Yeah.
You horrible little prick. Do you have lots of, like, do you still have big meals where you'd sort of, like, hang out as a family?
Yeah, we do. Like, couscous is, like, every Friday my mum will make couscous. It's a tradition.
Is that right?
Yeah, and we all, like, go. Everyone goes. And then, but we do this thing. So, like, she puts it on the table. We all eat from the plate. So we've got a tradition, like, in Morocco, like, we all eat from the same plate, but you have to eat from your side.
Right.
Like, you can't be going everywhere else. Yeah. And if there's, because sometimes, like, my older sister, she likes tomatoes, so my mum puts, like, full tomato in the tagine. I fucking hate tomato.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, my mum will put it somewhere not the tagine, the couscous, and my sister will go, oh, can I have that tomato? And then my mum will pass it to her, like, you can't just go and pick up yourself. So it's not etiquette.
So it's a great big plate like that.
Yeah.
And you what's it? And you will have your little area.
Yeah, you have to eat from your area.
And there's not like a small plate that you then put it on.
No.
You're eating straight from that.
Yeah,
you eat straight from that. It's a big plate. How are you getting that in the dishwasher?
No, we have to wash it in the bath.
I was going to... Just scrubbing it down like that. Oh, I hate Fridays. That is a big plate.
I know, that's...
Because there's 13 of you. And your mum, 14. Sweet mercy.
I'm telling you, it's carnage, bro. Yeah. Carnage. And we're all just like, you know. And then we like, so we eat and then we leave it. And then we undo our trousers.
Oh, do you? Yeah, I like that.
And then we just sit at the table and it stays there for like hours. And then we eat again and chat again and cuss and things like that. And then we add more onto it. And then we're just eating like the whole day.
I love that though. So that's a proper meal.
Yeah.
So you're just going back and forth and back. And is your mum doing all of this?
Yeah, she cooks it all. And then she'll go back and forth and put more on and stuff like that.
And does she like people helping her, or is that her thing? She likes to do the cooking.
She doesn't mind. My younger sister helps her a lot. Yeah. And then when she does all that, then we clean up and we'll hoover. You get couscous is a nightmare, man. Yeah. When it's like glitter.
Yeah.
You get it everywhere. Like you just can't get rid of it. So like we hoover and then we take that big thing to the bath and like wash it. It's so heavy, you know. Like,
yeah,
because we buy them from Morocco, so you have to buy them and then you get a man to transport it over because it's so heavy. Like, two of us have to bring it in.
Yeah.
It's like bringing in Cleopatra or something. You know,
I was
going to
say,
it's mad.
But that's a massive. That's a journey, isn't it? So it comes from Morocco. You can't imagine just breaking it on the way.
That has happened.
Has it? Yeah. Kill you, isn't it? You just kind of, mate. I love those meals when everyone's just chatting away and you're just sort of earwigging and listening in. And
yes, it is. I think it's more about catching up than the food, to be honest. We talk more than we eat, you know, because you're just like chatting away, catching up, cussing this one, cussing that one. Oh my God, did you hear so-and-so's daughter's getting a divorce?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. All the gossip and stuff like that. Oh my God, your auntie did this and all this kind of, your auntie, you know, your cousin's getting married to a man that's, you know, 4 foot or something like that. And you're like, okay. So it's all like all that kind of stuff. So
what I love about you is I've just noticed that when you gossip, I don't know if you're aware of this, but your head goes full crocodile. You know, when you see a crocodile attack and it kind of goes like that, but you do, you literally kind of, you'll never guess what. I can just see the eyes like that. It's really nice.
Have you ever picked up a chicken and like moved its body?
Do you know, I've done that with my dog. So there used to be a cat in the garden and I would show the cat to my dog and I would move my dog's body and his head would stay there. Like, and you'd sort of go, I'd like call my wife and go, look at this. I mean, that's a real indication that my days aren't that busy. Like, the dog's head won't move, look. Because his body's there, but the head's still there, look. Yeah, great, Russ. Are we getting on with tea? I like that. So that was the first one. What's next?
Thank you. So my second one is, I think you might be able to relate to this. So the second one is like my mum's chest.
I can relate to it, yeah. Of course I can. I've seen the websites. Sorry. It was there. I'm sorry.
I was going to say you better not be able to relate because my dad is violent.
Okay. What is it about your mum's chest?
I think it's... So obviously it's...
Hey, come on. What I'm going to say, I've never had anyone put their mum's chest into the Wonder Box.
So it's not her boobies,
obviously. Okay, all right. Well, you know. I don't know. It could be, and that's fine.
Guys, he's blushing.
I am blushing. I am. Yeah. Chest. So it's...
Like when I was younger, I remember, I don't know if you had this as well, but like when you cry or like if you hurt yourself or even as an adult, if you cry, and my mum always does this thing. She just pulls you, puts you on her chest and she's like, Safi, Safi, which means enough. She's like, Safi, Safi, I've been to Safi. Enough, daughter, enough. And she's like, and it's such a comfort. And I remember once hearing Ian Wright talk about it in the same way. And I was like, oh, other people have this too. Like he was saying, because he was talking about liking about fuller figured women.
Yeah.
And he said his grandma used to always pull him into her chest and he found such a comfort in that. And I relate to it. There's a comfort. You feel so safe.
Mm.
And like, it's just like there, nothing can happen. And like, so yeah, it's that nice feeling of like safety, security, protection.
Yeah.
I would say.
And would you ever deliberately cry just to get yourself in that magical space? Or could your mum tell? Or is it only for the... Yeah, we weren't a particularly tactile family. So we're not like...
We're not either, to be honest with you. Okay. We're not really...
But your mum knew that was the thing.
Yeah, when you cry and stuff, she'd pull you and go, don't cry.
Safi. I love that as well, Safi.
Safi. It means enough. Like, enough. Don't like that kind of... But not in a, like, enough. Not like that. Just like... It's okay, Safi, Safi. It's okay, like, you know.
Then there's like a queue of 9 other
siblings
waiting.
Yeah. Exactly, we have to do raffle tickets, like, number 21.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this just lovely sort of chesty Argos. You just sort of sat there. It's beautiful, though.
Was your
mum a very sort of kind mum, or was she a sort of a stern mum?
I would say stern mum. And like when I was naughty, I used to be naughty at school, only because like although I was born here and raised here, my dad didn't used to let us speak English at home. He was really like, you need to learn our language and our culture. We're Muslim, Moroccans, and we're British too. But in the home, he wanted to foster the Moroccan side of us and the mm-hmm. Muslim side and speaking Arabic and stuff like that. And I'm grateful for that because I'm in touch with my culture. I can cook all the food. I can speak the language. And I have these two brains as well. I have like the Moroccan brain and then the British brain.
All right.
And the third one is like the Muslim brain. And like you have to engage all of them sometimes. And when doing comedy as well, I'm like, is this going to work? Is this going to translate for the North Africans and Arabs? Is this going to work for the Muslims? Is this going to, yeah. you know, so you have to run it through all these different like brains.
Have you ever performed in Morocco?
No, I've never, because the humour's a bit different.
Right.
Like, so I wouldn't be able to do it. I'd need like to practice a lot.
What as in you'd, oh yeah, of course, because you'd have to perform. Have you ever done stand-up in Arabic?
No.
Right.
I do gigs that are like, we do it. There's a gig called Arabs Are Not Funny.
Yeah.
And we do that. And we do that, but like it's in English.
Yeah.
And anyone can come. Yeah. But it's just all the acts are North African or Arab.
Yes.
Or Middle Eastern.
But so. Presumably bits of that, there must be punchlines occasionally in Arabic. And
yes.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yes.
Does it feel like a sort of communal gig?
Yes, it feels like. Yeah, it does. It feels like. So when I'm talking about things that are. Specific to our culture and stuff like that, I don't have to explain too much.
Yeah.
Whereas
right.
if I'm doing it to like,
got you.
What do you call it? Mainstream audience. I have to build it up.
Yes.
I can just go in and bang, and they'll get it. So there is that. But there's also pressure as well because it's your, and I do air quotes with this, like because it's your people.
Mm.
There's pressure because sometimes this is another thing. Sometimes I feel like they want. They are people want me to represent them in a certain way. Like I can't just be myself. Like, I can't be Fatia. Like if I'm being Muslim, like the Muslims want me to be a certain way.
Right.
The North Africans want me to be a certain way. Yeah. The British want me to be a certain way. Like it's really hard sometimes. Like they put me in these boxes. I don't put myself in them.
Yeah.
And then when you don't do what they want, they get angry and stuff. So it's there's pressure with those gigs a lot. I feel the most pressure with those gigs.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because you suddenly, you're right. Presumably, whenever anyone describes you, they're like, oh, it's the Muslim comedian, yeah. Fatia. Whereas nobody would ever describe me as, you know, the white British comedian, yeah. Russell Howard. Like, do you know what I mean? And it's only when you phrase that, I was like, yeah, God, that's so different. I've just got my name. Whereas yeah. you've got a religion that you have to uphold yeah. or be a representative of.
Yeah.
And do you have certain areas where you think, oh, that's really funny, but I better not, or?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah, there are. I like to talk about, so the things I talk about are things I've lived, like experiences, yeah. things I've seen, I've heard, and stuff like that. And then sometimes, like, if you want to talk about, sometimes, like, the sexual stuff, maybe, then they can get frowned upon.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, why are you talking like that? And I'm like, well, this is my experience. I can share it if I like.
Yeah.
You know? And then yeah. they say, like, oh, but a Muslim woman's not supposed to behave like that. I'm like, says who? Because yeah. I don't see you saying this to the male Muslim comedians.
Yeah.
Like, but you want to come to me. Don't come for me, bro. Yeah. I'm ready for you.
Yeah. But that must be
I've got 13 siblings, bro. Trust me.
Yeah. But that must be really, presumably, it must be so exciting being a sort of a trailblazer, talking about things like that.
Yeah.
But on the same, by the same token, kind of scary.
It is, because you want to relate to, you want everyone, I want my Muslim audience to relate to me. Yeah. I want my British audience to relate to me. Mm. So it's difficult. And then if you take one, obviously when I do Muslim gigs where everything has to be 100% halal, because sometimes at these Muslim shows, they can bring, like it can be 14-year-olds and think
right.
like their parents will bring their kids
yeah.
and stuff like that. And then they just want that kind of stuff, you know, or yes. even saying things like bitch or shit.
Yeah.
Is like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
grab their hijabs, you know, like, you know, and stuff like that. So, it's tough. But this is what I'm like, sometimes I feel like I have to write double the jokes.
Yeah.
Because you have to make things.
Well, it's three different worlds. Yeah.
yeah. And I want to be relatable to all of them. I do want to represent these people and I do want to represent these, but I also have to be true to myself. Sometimes I feel like Venom. Have you seen Venom, the film?
is that with Tom Hardy?
Yeah, I feel like that. Just like tearing yourself apart to be this and then be, and he's like, ah, leave me alone. One day I'm going to go crazy.
Did you, is, because you're writing a book, aren't you, at the minute?
Yes.
And is this part of it? that kind of the trickiness of trying to be yourself.
Yes. So the book I'm writing is for like 13-year-olds.
Oh, really?
But it is about that. It is about a girl who starts wearing a hijab and she's trying to find herself and find her place in society and where she belongs and comfortable within herself too.
Mm.
So, yeah, it is. It's tough. Like,
what is it like wearing a hijab? Is it because we sort of have like, I look at it and think, God, there must be days when that is fantastic because you could just wazz it on, don't have to worry.
Yeah.
But there must be other days when you're sort of thinking, oh God, I'd rather not. I don't know. This is why I'm asking. And it's sort of, when could you ever ask?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. I've seen loads of people wearing hijabs, but I've never gone, what's it like wearing one of them? Because you look, the scariest I ever saw, and I will let you answer the question. I was in Dubai and I saw ladies skiing. There's like an indoor ski center in Dubai, which is insane, in the desert. And they've got kind of hijabs on and they're skiing. And that looked perilous. Do you know what I mean? I was like, oh, fuck. But what is it like?
I've been wearing.
Is that a horrible question to ask?
I think it's good to ask these questions because that's how you. If you might have a perception, I'm not saying you do, but like someone listening might have a perception. So it's good to ask these questions and get it out, I think. I think no question is a bad question. And plus, I know your intention. If you were being a dickhead, that's a different story. Yeah. I'll glass you, innit, bro? with this bottle of here. So.
Excellent. Imagine that. Imagine the one who got it wrong. It just glassed me straight away.
So, yeah, it's about intention. What is it like? I don't know. Sometimes I always, you know what? It's for me, I wear it, and for me, it's an extension of my faith, and and I like wearing it. I like matching it with all my clothes as well.
I would say the color scheme of that one is nice. I really like that.
This one's from Morocco.
Is it?
And I've got yellow shoes on, which match a little bit of the yellow. See?
Yeah. I like that.
See, bruv? I love all the matching up and stuff like that. But that's not why I wear it. Like, it's just, for me, it was just bringing me closer to my faith. And that's why I started wearing it. It is, in Islam, it's compulsory.
Yeah.
But I also understand that it's a it's a decision, it's a choice. Mm. There's always, you always have to have choice. Mm. And the faith does say that. And also, it's a journey and it's a responsibility. So you have to be, there's all these things you have to think about before you wear it. And most of the time, for me, I feel like it's just part of me. Like, do you know, it's just me and an extension of myself. But sometimes, the only time I'm aware of it is when other people make you aware. So they look at you funny or they treat you funny. So then that's when I'm aware of it. And sometimes I feel like I'm always on the back. And then people use it negatively against me as well. Like if I'm doing well in comedy, they're like, oh, it's because you've got a hijab. And I'm like, my hijab don't write the jokes, dickhead. Like, what do you think? You know, that's why I'm so aggressive.
Yeah.
Like yesterday I was doing a gig and I threatened to kill everyone about 10 times.
All right, let's unpack that. Why did you threaten to kill them?
I don't, because they weren't laughing enough. I was like, hello, those are my best jokes. Yeah. Are you stupid, bruv? Yeah. Laugh now.
Did you want to do comedy before you did it? Like, as in, was it a dream when you were little, or was it not?
Not really. I've always been into like performing. So in college, I did like performing arts and dance. We've always been like in Morocco. I know how to belly dance. I've been belly dancing since I was about 6.
Nice.
Call me. I'm just trying to call me, guys. And
so would you? Okay, I don't really. You call her. It's sort of like a give her a call. We should set up like a separate like number for Fatia.
Yeah.
But belly dancing must be right. Like, if I had the skill, I'd be doing it all the time.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah,
we should do it all together.
Kind of the role looks phenomenal.
It is.
I remember spending ages trying to figure out how to do that once. And just, you know, like some people can like get that square in the middle of their belly.
Yes.
When everything gets sucked out and then the square and then move it around. I was like a good half an hour in the garden. And my dad was like, the fuck are you doing? You don't understand, Dad.
That's cultural appropriation.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm going to hang out. But yeah, the role looks It looks fun.
Yeah, it's yeah. You have to do it a few times to like warm up. But yeah, but I love it. And yeah, we do. We like we used to. My aunt used to come over and we used to just dance all weekend.
You belly dance with your auntie?
Yeah.
Wow. I can't imagine doing that with my auntie Zena. Zena, Sandra. I think my auntie Sue could. I think she's got the skills. What's next? Let's have a look.
Oh, so my next one is Ramadan.
Okay.
So during Ramadan, is like it's the holiest month in the Islamic calendar, and it's a beautiful month. Everyone looks forward to it.
Do they?
Yeah, that's we love it. It's like, it's a reset. That's what I would describe it as. And what I love about it is that Ramadan feeling, because you get like, there's this beautiful feeling. I would call it alignment. That's what I'd call it. So I feel like your mind, your body and your soul aligns. It's such a beautiful feeling and you feel so at peace. And, you know, like even things like eating, you eat for your body. I can't describe it. Like you eat, like I don't eat a lot of shit during Ramadan and like I'm eating so clean and so good. And there's just such a serenity about it, you know. And
because it's so interesting hearing you talk about it, because my brain would go, like we spoke about this earlier when you were saying that you were fasting.
Yes.
And I was like, do you mind if I'm going to have some coffee? Is that all right? But you were like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
But you were saying you don't have like mad cravings.
Yeah, you don't. It's like the water's the most important for me. So like yesterday, for example, we had to stop eating at like 4:25. So
In the morning,
AM. So like I was really tired yesterday. Usually I break my fast and I stay up all the way until 4:45 for whatever time we have to stop eating. But yesterday I was tired. So I broke my fast and I was gigging, finished the gig, got home about midnight, went to bed about 1:00. And then set the alarm for like 4:00. And then I was just sipping water slowly until I had to stop. And then went back to bed and then woke up. So that was okay. But you just eat differently. You eat differently. And you just feel closer to the faith as well. Like, I can't, it's just such a beautiful feeling. Everyone looks forward to it. Like, you're like, oh, Ramadan, the month before. And the first week is a bit tough, the first few days, because it's a new routine. Your body has to get used to it and stuff. And your sleep pattern and all that, you have to change all that.
I was going to say, but like gigging as well. Like getting in at like 12.
Yeah.
And then like a 3 hour sleep before you've then got to get up. That sounds tough, but you're sort of you're saying it with a smile.
Yeah, because I feel really refreshed.
Okay.
I had such a good sleep. And I feel it was a nice deep sleep. I just feel good this morning. Like, this is the first one out of, we've only been, this today's like the 8th day of Ramadan. And I feel refreshed.
I would say your skin, if you don't mind me saying, your skin looks really radiant.
Thank you, honey.
Because you're 43.
Yeah, I'm going to be 43.
Call her. But I was going to say, I wonder if that's why you look radiant, because you're fasting.
Can I ask for the people who may not know, what, just fill in the rules of when do you eat and drink and...
So what happens, the reason why it's the holy month is because that during Ramadan is when the Quran came down to the people through the prophet, peace be upon him. And so what the rules are, you don't eat from, you can't eat or drink from sunrise, crack of dawn to sunset. So it's the crack of dawn, which is, the crack of dawn is like 2-3 hours before dawn.
Wow.
So it's when you see the first sliver of light in the sky, that's when you need to stop.
Right.
And then you break your fast at sundown.
And can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. When you're younger, before you're ready, used to this, are you smashing as much food into yourself before the crack?
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
I was going to say, when you're like, if you're a 13-year-old, you must be like, right, where's the crack?
Yeah. When I was younger, we used to do that, like have like 10 Mars bars and... And my mom's like, you are an animal. You learn nothing from this month.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. So, and then as you get older, it's different. You start to realise, when I break my fast, I'm very slow, very slow, like eating up. We make this soup, it's called harira.
Yeah.
And it's got like 30 things in it. It's got like chickpeas, meat, eggs, spaghetti, lentils, all this stuff, loads of stuff in it. And that for me, I have to have it every day during Ramadan. Like, otherwise I don't feel like I'm doing Ramadan.
But I wonder if that's like a slow release as well.
Yes.
You've got lots of different, you've got proteins and nutrients and it just helps your body go through it.
That's right. So usually that's enough. And I have like, we have these things called raghayef or msimmen. And they're like, do you know paratas?
Yeah.
They're like paratas, but they've got loads of layers similar to that. And it's a Moroccan pastry thing, and I have a bit of that with like a bit of cheese or something, but just a little bit. I don't like to have too much, and you have to drink slowly and eat slowly, otherwise you end up like exploding.
Wow.
But there's just such a, it's, you know, like for me the most powerful and most beautiful is just before you break your fast.
Yeah.
I don't know, this like you've waited all that time and then this is the time, you know, and there's like a beautiful prayer that we do, and I just feel at that time I feel so connected to everything around me and everything, like I'm a lot calmer as well. I know you're like, bitch, are you crazy? You've been swearing like a bitch on this.
That's projection. I did not say bitch, you're crazy. Come on. I don't know what my face gave away, but I'm enjoying your company.
You said you were going to glass him.
Yeah. But I'm intrigued by it. So what is it about the... Because I love the idea of being calm, but I can't imagine to go that long without food and then just being serene.
Yes.
Because I would imagine it would just be like, right, is that it? And... like, do you know what I mean? But the way you're... I think of it through a lot of times through... I'm a Liverpool fan, so I think of like Mo Salah.
Yes.
So him playing football during Ramadan is unbelievable.
Yes.
When you sort of say energy levels, because I didn't even know you're not allowed to drink water.
Yes.
So he is training and then playing a game. Like the calories he must be burning. And like you say, he's getting up to like 4 to kind of get all the nutrients in to train then play.
Yes.
And you can break fast, what time would he be able to break?
So at the moment it's like 6:15, but it goes up a few minutes every day.
The clocks change, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this is what we were saying. So
Clocks are gonna.
But presumably at 6:15, he is then taking in kind of all the calories he can take to get through the game, but then he doesn't want to be bloated.
Yes.
Which makes his performance even more incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
I'm obviously nothing compared to him, but like I still go to the gym, although I'm fasting, and like I'm still gigging and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, totally.
And stuff. And it's like, again, it's just about adapting.
Mm.
So he might fast a few before Ramadan just to get your body into it, to acclimatise maybe, I don't know. But it's still incredible, like you said, I couldn't do it. Like, wow, that's the peak fitness, bro. Peak.
Yeah, but also...
Call me.
Call her. Call her. But it's...
End of Ramadan's a thing, isn't it?
Yes, we have... So end of Ramadan, we have Eid, which is a big celebration. And then, like, so in Morocco, we do it here as well. You'd buy, like, a sheep or a cow if you had a lot of money, and then you slaughter it and you keep some for yourself and you give some to your family, like, and other people that are poor and stuff like that. I remember once I was in Morocco for Eid actually, and this guy come knocking on the door and he was like, do you have any meat? I was like, are you taking the fucking piss, bruv? Come knocking on my door like this. I went proper mad. I was like, get the fuck out of it. And then my aunt was like, who was that fed? I was like, some dickhead, innit? And she was like, what did he want? I said, he's asking for meat. Can you believe the cheek of it? Do I look like a fucking butcher's? I was going on a mad one.
Yeah.
And she was like, you crazy bitch. Go and give him the meat. And I had to chase him out of the estate and go, Habibi, please. I'm sorry, Habibi. Come back and I had to give it to him and say, I'm really sorry. I didn't know, man.
I mean, that might be my favourite story ever. How old were you when you, I mean, I pity the cold caller that rings you up. Hello, are you happy with your gas electric? I'm going to fucking cut you. Wow, how old were you?
I was like maybe in my 20s, like late 20s or something like that. I didn't know, man. I was like, what is it? Because I was like, the London vibe, innit?
Yeah,
someone knocks on your door. I'm like, bruv, honestly, if there's in my block now, if there's people outside making noise, I'm like, bruv, if you don't shut the fuck up, I'm going to heat some oil, bruv. You're going to have a shower and stuff. And people are like, Fetha, you can't. People in the WhatsApp group going, Fetha, please.
Do you ever have massages? Because.
No.
No, I think you could do with a massage. Like, because you're. That's what I mean. Like, but the oscillation between sweet and angry, like, is fucking insane, Fatia. Like, 1 minute is just like, do you know what I mean? I love this. And then, but if anyone's noisy.
Do you know, sometimes, like, I'll be on the bus. This happened to me a few times. And I'll be talking in, like, the dialect, Moroccan, to my mum. And someone will say, excuse me, or something like that. And I won't hear them because I'm on the fucking phone, mm-hmm. innit?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then rather than, like, if someone doesn't hear me, like, I would tap you and go, sorry, can I just get through, like, or whatever. And then they say, like, racist shit. You know what I mean? And stuff. And I'm like, mum, can I call you back? She's like, Fatia, what? And she knows. She's like, what is going on? And I'm like, I just need to kick someone's ass. Let me call you back. I'm talking to her in Arabic. And I put the phone down. I go up. I go, would you fucking say? And they go, and they start shitting themselves.
Yeah.
I'm like, don't run your gums, bruv, yeah? You want to fucking swallow your mouth? And they're like, oh, and all this. I'm like, dickhead. And then I walk off.
Beautiful. It's like Moroccan Batman.
Yeah. I love that. Run your gums. Yeah. What a great phrase. You've been running your gums. Have you ever, that'd be a great show title. Don't run your gums. But is this, like, you have clearly, do you think your personality comes because the adversity you've had? Even the way you were describing it, you were kind of going, oh, you know when someone's racist on the bus and you're on the phone to your mum, you're like, I've got to go and deal with this. Yeah. No, I don't know what that's like. But, like, do you know what I mean? Because I've never been on the phone going, sorry, mum, someone's calling me whitey again. I got to go. But it's that you mention that in such an offhand way that clearly that's something that you're used to in a way that I'm not.
Yeah, no, definitely. You do. Like, I'm the, honestly, the people that know me will, like, I'm the kindest person.
Yeah,
I'll do anything for you. Like,
yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
I will help people. Yeah. Like, my friends know, like, but.
Unless they want meat. That's your only thing. That's your only weakness. If someone comes around you asking for chorizo, they're going to get a fucking mouthful. But I wonder, so presumably, like, dealing with hecklers was never a problem.
I've had people wait for me after gigs, like, to fight. And like,
really?
Yeah, and I'm like, you want to go? Let's
go.
Oh,
my God.
You
they
go?
Cracked instantly. Have you really?
Yeah.
Fuck, that's you and Craig Campbell. You're the only... That's the only comedians I know. I remember seeing Craig do a gig in Wales at the Wharf. He was getting heckled by somebody, and he said, I'll meet you outside... Bring your fucking God. And the whole room went, yeah. Because you were like, oh, Jesus, this is going to get, you know. Let's go to a calm place.
Yes.
What is the next thing that you want to put in the Wonder Box?
So the next thing for me, this is a bit of a beautiful thing
okay.
as well. So, like, you know, sometimes when it's this, yeah, so sometimes, I guess this reminds me of the beauty of nature and how beautiful the world is and how beautiful nature is. So, like, for example, you know, like, when it's windy, it's really windy, and then like they have to stop flights in Gatwick and Heathrow and all the Stansted, all of them, because the aeroplane can't, you know, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
But then when it'll be windy, and if you look up at the sky and you see these birds and they're still able to fly.
Yeah.
Like, and they're not moved, like, they'll be going against the wind, and they're just like, and it just reminds me of how perfect nature is.
Right.
Like, there's a beauty about it where I'm like, wow, look at that, the creation.
There must be, I'd love to zoom in on a bird.
Yeah.
Like, above Heathrow, when all the planes have been stalled, because there must be a lovely smirk.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The bird must just be giving it full, like,
yeah.
Can you not do it? Is it a bit windy for you, is it? Is it robot bird? Can you not do what I do? Have you ever seen a murmuration up close?
No.
Oh, my God. That is nature's lap dance.
Yeah.
If you're ever lucky enough, I remember I was in the Cotswolds and I'd never seen one before. And it felt like there was 300 birds just like, and it kind of gave me goosebumps talking about it, but they just swirl all around you. It's the most incredible thing of them just, like, it's like a lava lamp and they're all, just
like a genie,
mate,
coming,
it's so beautiful, and the noise is this, just this kind of like flutter of birds, just
yeah,
It's the and the sky, you know, it's that lovely kind of blue and reddy summer. Yeah. Ugh, it was insane. And I don't normally film stuff. It was the only time, like, I was like, oh, I've got to capture this. Mm. And I put it on my family group.
In case you're interested, they do it to look massive, like one massive bird, because there's a predator nearby.
Yeah, I mean, I was dressed as a fox. So that probably makes sense why they did it. Is that right? So they do it to, but it's sort of strength in numbers.
And do you know when you saw it, did it just appear, or did it start slowly? Like, was it a few birds and then it built up, or did it just appear?
Was just suddenly there, and yeah. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. I wasn't even aware of the word murmuration. I was just like, wow, there's like 300 birds. What is this? It was really incredible. It felt like this, and I was the only person in this. We were like in this Airbnb in this like big house, and I was the only person there witnessing it. It was like a lap dance. It was so incredible.
Nature's lap dance.
There was there was nothing erotic to it. But it's like, wasn't. No, they were just like
dressed as a fox watching these birds do a lap dance. No. You dirty bitch.
I wasn't. It was edging. I believe that's what they call it. But it was. I know what you mean about that thing with nature. It's that kind of connection between the planet and the animal.
Yes.
And it's just in perfect harmony. Yes. So it can't be too windy for a bird, because a bird lives in the wind.
Yeah. I love it. I once saw like an otter give birth, and they give birth in the water.
Yeah.
And they lie on their back.
Yeah.
And she just pulled it. She did it herself. She was pushing, and she just pulled the baby and laid it on her chest.
Wow.
And you know, like humans, we do skin to skin.
Yeah.
And she was doing the same thing. She was just, and floating on her back.
Oh my God.
It was amazing.
Please tell me there was a dad otter nearby, just with a cigar. How did you see that?
I saw it on a video. Oh, like, not in real life.
I thought that was you just walking by the lake. Oh, get a load of this.
No, yeah.
That's beautiful.
Me walking past the Regent's Canal and just see this otter. No, bruv, no.
You're going to say something about seahorses?
Yeah, like, so seahorses,
they kick them out, don't they?
It's they all do, like, yeah, but yeah. It's the man.
Yes,
it's not the woman. So the woman, she gets pregnant and she gives it to the man.
Yeah.
And then he carries it and he's like, hoo! Yeah. And it all comes out.
He shoots the babies out of his dick.
Shoots.
Yeah, no, he does. Like hundreds in it. And it's just, it's literally going. Just absolutely.
Like, bang, 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 bang,
yeah.
bang.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And then, but not all of them live. Only something like 100 live. But that's why they have so many.
Right. There should be, I've said this many times, there should be a nature program for people that don't know a lot about animals, but they just get really excited.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
We should do one, Russell.
Mate,
and then I could be like, what the fuck is that?
Have you ever been on a safari?
No. Is it good? I get scared, man.
Yeah, same. Me and my wife went on one, and she was beyond excited, and I was terrified.
Yeah.
Because one day, one of those lions is going to go full Neo from The Matrix and realise, actually, instead of hunting buffalo, there's some Americans on that Jeep with no windows, and it is going to be a blah, blah. But it was so, I remember there was this moment where our guide was called Joffrey, and I only know one Joffrey, and, you know, and he said, and there was lions all around our Jeep, and giving it all shoulders, and just the kinetic muscular, you know, I was so like, you're literally seeing them where you are to me, but I'm slightly elevated, and they're looking at this kind of buffalo and they're walking along. And he's like, does anyone want a gin and tonic? And you're like, shut your fucking mouth. Don't shout. And the two people next to me were like, I would love a gin and tonic. Shut the fuck. I couldn't believe it. But for whatever reason, those lions don't see the Jeep as prey. They see it as a threat.
Mm.
But when you're sat there and you can see it, you're like, it's honestly, it's not enjoyable. Yeah,
I'm like you, I'm scared because I can't run in it. That's why I'm a good fighter, because I can't run.
Right.
So like, I would just get eaten. I'm scared of things like that. I don't know. I'm a bit like, woo-hoo.
Yeah.
If a leaf moves, I'm like, what's that?
Yeah.
I'm so on. But I think some of that goes back to being a Muslim woman with a hijab and being attacked and stuff like that, because I have had people try to pull my hijab off loads of times and stuff. Yeah. So like, especially on like public transport, especially in the night, like I have to sit somewhere where they can't sit at a seat where they can't get the back of my head and stuff like that, because they'll just be like walking and pull your hijab and things like that. So you have to be, I'm 20 times aware of everything that's going on around us, you know,
wow.
and stuff. So
why? What?
It's more vigilant. I know people are just. This is. I don't know, man. People are crazy. That's what they do. I've been spat at. I've had someone pour alcohol, but I chased him. And he went into these blocks, and I couldn't. I was like, I had to stop because I was like, I don't know. There could be 20 of his friends on the other side, so I had to stop. There's always that on guard, always on guard of stuff of like. And when you say this, people are like, oh, don't be so silly, or like, and I'm like, I'm not, like, this is the truth, and that's why I don't like talking about it. Because sometimes people are like, oh, you're this can't be real, and I'm like, why would I make it up, like, you know? And then people say dumb shit. They're like, oh, why don't you just put your hood on? I'm like, that is not the solution. Like, put your jacket hood up. That's not the solution. The solution is we have a problem here. Like, do you know what I mean? We have to fix it.
And I think what's interesting about it is as painful as that is, you can change perceptions through comedy.
Yes.
I really do believe that. It's sort of like telling a funny story about that somehow then makes a percentage of those idiots that would do that go, well, I should probably not do that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's sort of, there's a power in comedy to change things sometimes.
I totally agree with you. There's once I did a gig, it was a friend's gig, and he was like, oh, Fete, come and do this gig. And it was round my way. So I was like, oh, this will be okay. And I walked in, and it was like St. George's flags everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hello, mum. Yeah, I love you. Yeah, I don't know when I'm going to see you again, but I love you. You know, that kind of thing. And then I was like, oh, shit. And there was a massive mastiff walking around and not on a leash. I was like, oh, it was the dodgiest pub I've ever performed in. And then I did the gig, and then the landlady come up to me, and she and they were Irish. And she said, she said, my family's like yours. I've got loads of sisters as well. She goes, I should do stand up. I've got loads of sisters too. And our mum's like that. And we have a similar thing and this. And then they connect with you. Because a lot of the people, when you're different, a lot of the time, these people have never had maybe never even met a Muslim, don't have any Muslim friends, or they might have negative experiences with people that are Muslim.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing, isn't it? Everyone is in a different bubble. And the great thing about comedy is that it pops those bubbles and you're able to go, oh, wow, so a Muslim family eats like that. That's not dissimilar to how a Catholic family eats. Oh, but it's the fact that you're walking into this pub and that you thought was going to be awful. You thought you were going to die. And then at the end of it, this Irish lady goes, oh, I'm a bit like you. And then you walk home. Yeah. Isn't that mad? And your mum's like, oh, I didn't think I was going to see you again. And then you go round to dinner and your table's been taken. Someone else has had it. Was there anything else, or have we done everything?
There was one more.
What was the
thing?
Next?
So, like, the last thing for me is like music, but it's a certain type of music. So, there's in Morocco, we've got, sorry, not Morocco, it's a Middle Eastern, North African, Arab type of music. It's called derbouga, and it's a beat. It's like a drum, and it's a beat that they make on the drum. And I can't, like, it's so, when I hear it, like, my spine calls to attention.
Look, here's a bit now.
Oh, God. So it's boom, the gum, dum, brum, dum, 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 brum, dum, 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 brum, dum, 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 boom, 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 boom. But it does make your whole body want to gyrate.
It does, and like you can't help it. You can just and you just like start like sometimes it's because like sometimes people will read something religious like the Quran or something like not necessarily the Quran, maybe like something religious, and then there'll be that beat in it, and I cannot, and I'm like, because you're not supposed to dance that. Can you imagine the priest is like, and we are gathered here today, and you're like, brrrup! Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you definitely don't get that on Songs of Praise. Do you know what I mean? Nobody's like that kind of sing Hosanna, brrrup! Are your hymns a bit more?
Yeah, a little. It's melodic, a little bit. But this is why they try not to use a lot of that in it. It's usually just they try to use voices and make it like solemn a little bit, just the harmonies. Because if it gets like people will dance, you learn that. Because sometimes you can't help it. Your legs like twitching.
So, do you play any musical instruments?
No, lockdown.
But you just feel the beat.
Yeah, feel it. I feel it a lot. And I listen to a lot to Arabic music as well. And when they say, because there's certain words that we say in Arabic, like there's this beautiful song and it's called Sul Ta'liq. And I talk about this on stage. What she means, like basically the guy, she's in love with this guy, he's disappeared. And she's like, I'm looking for you, I'm asking. And it's really poetic. She's like, I asked Sul Ta'liq li yasmin, like I asked the jasmine tree, where is he? And she didn't know. Sul Ta'liq al-Nujum, I asked the stars about you. Sul Ta'liq al-Sahab, I asked the clouds. But nobody knew where you were there. And then what I say on stage, I'm like, yeah, bitch, because those things don't talk.
Yes, okay? I was going to say. Yeah.
Do you think you're Disney princess? What the fuck is going on here?
What I love is, well, when you're able to see a song in a different context.
Yeah.
Like, we were on holiday recently, me and my wife. And that song was playing in the background. This girl is on fire. Yeah. This girl is on fire.
Yeah.
And I was like, no one's doing anything. This woman's burning to death. And it like, but when you hear the song like that, she's calling it like, this girl's on fire. Like, if you ever go to a karaoke night in the north of England, you realise how creepy a lot of songs are when you hear an old northern man. I bet that you look good on the dance floor. You're like, oh, Jesus, Jeff, you've changed that one.
Saturday night and I like the way you move. Pretty baby.
It's just like, it's so funny how these lyrics that are incredible, you say them in a different way and they are chilling.
That's funny. You know, it's sometimes we have these like, it's funny you mentioned karaoke. Number one, like, I'm an animal at karaoke.
Yeah.
Like, I fucking punch people and don't let no one on the mic. Okay. And I'm like, bitch, I'll fucking strangle you with my hijab. Get the fuck out of here. This is my turn.
Yep.
They're like, Fetha, you're on your 10th song. I'm like, and what, bitch?
Yeah.
Move.
Yeah. What are you singing? So,
we should go sometime.
Yeah. What are you singing, Sweet Caroline?
My favourite karaoke song is Living on a Prayer.
Oh, yeah.
It's my favourite. But I end up losing my voice. I can't do it. It's too high. But, I was going to say as well, so, like, because I wear hijab, obviously, and which we've said, like, so many times, and you can see. We have these, like, you get these women that put on these women-only parties. The security's women, everything. DJ's a woman, everything. Yeah. And all women can come to it. And you get a lot of Muslim women turning up. And then we do our hair up and we wear hijab. And then as soon as we get in, we take it off. And it's weird. It's like so funny because you see all these women, some people in niqab. Niqab is the face veil where you can only see the eyes.
Yeah.
And then you come in and she takes it off and she's got like this tight miniskirt on. Like, it's wild. And her hair is like on the floor. Like, it's that long.
Yeah.
And these massive red lips and her breasts are like at the ceiling. I'm like, bruv, what is going on here? But so it's wild. So anyway, I've been to a few of those.
I'd love to go to that. Isn't that like, I don't know what that says about me, but it's just, it sounds so exciting. I bet you a bloke has snuck in pretending to be a lady. Just
no,
to see
they
what
check.
Happens.
They check at the door. Yeah,
okay,
yeah. Security's
right,
yeah.
Okay.
Take it off.
Take off. Imagine that. Shh. Fucking hell, it's Russell Howard. I just wanted to know. Get out.
And it's so good. Like, and you're not allowed to take any pictures as well. They have a wall and it's all got flowers and it's decorated. And you can only take a picture there. You're not allowed to do any on the dance floor. If you do, they drag you out and they make you delete it as well. Like, it's proper tight. Because so people can feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So I've been to a few. And one time I had my hair cut and I got my hair done.
Yeah.
And I was wearing my hijab really light. And then I got there, took it off. I was wearing like Moroccan dress. Bruv, at the end of the night, I had my hair up here on the top of my head. No fucking shoes. I don't even know where my shoes were. I never found them. Like, it was wild. I was on the dance floor till like 3 o'clock. The DJ, I'm going, one more. She's going, I gotta go home. I'm going, please, bro, please. It was crazy shit.
I love it. I fucking love it.
Yeah. And it was mad.
But I just can't imagine a world in which, you know, if you were to say, right, it's a men only, straight men, right? Only disco. Honestly, they'd be climbing the walls to get out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But the idea, where's the girls? Oh, fuck, I don't like this. I don't like it. Like, it would be, but it's the fact that you're all there.
It was so good. And they played like all different music as well. They played like Arabic, English, everything, like rap music, everything, Bangra, everything. So all the women there had something and everyone enjoyed each other's music, you know?
There's a lot going on with you. Yeah. I love that. When is the book out?
The book is coming out in 2025.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can pre-order it.
Okay. And tours, anything?
Tours. I'm doing lots of work in progresses at the moment. And if you go on like any of my social medias, I've got a link to everything, the book and the work in progresses and all my other gigs.
Well, give it a spin. She's absolutely fantastic. Oh, just never ask her for meat.
Call me.
So there you go. That was Fatia. Call her. She was very clear. Call her. She's gigging all the time. She's actually working on her first novel, The Perks of My Hijab, which will be finally uplifting, fantastic. It's published next year. So keep your eyes out. Probably get it from Amazon, stuff like that. Join me next week for more Wonderbox.